Hey.
My Uber driver gave me the weirdest, like the weirdest way of introducing themselves to me today. I got in the car and they said, "Hi, I know you." And I was very confused. And then they mentioned how they'd already driven with me before. And I felt like an awful, awful person because I didn't remember them. I just have a really bad memory, but I felt like it was my fault that I didn't remember this Uber driver. I really like bugs. Ever since I was a kid, I was really into like bugs and insects. When I was really, really small, there was a bunch of woodlice that used to live in our garden. Spoiler alert for the rest of this episode, by the way. They're my favorite. Woodlice are my favorite bugs. Put that on record. They're just so cool. But before, I couldn't say the word woodlouse because it's a really hard word when you're a stupid little dumb baby. You can't say the word woodlouse because it's a lot of weird syllables, right? So I would just say friends. I called them my friends, and I used to pick them up, and I used to roll them up into little balls, and I used to be really happy with them, and I didn't really understand that they probably didn't like being rolled up into balls, but I named them friends. Woodlice have a ton of names, though. They're called, like, Bibble Bugs, Chisel Hogs, Monkey Pee. I know Monkey Pee. I like Chuggy Pig. Chuggy Pig's my favorite. Sometimes Chiggy Pig as well. They're my favorites. I love Chiggy Pig. It's such a cute little nickname you can have for someone as well. Chiggy Pig. But yeah, crustaceans, not really bugs, I guess. But yeah, they're my favorite. They're the best. When I was a kid, I used to have these little, like, I guess the best way of describing them is scissors. They weren't quite like, they didn't cut things, but they were like these little clamps. And on the end of it was a little, like hemisphere, like two hemispheres, so that when you would open the scissors, imagine how you would open scissors, instead of opening up two sharp blades, it would open up the sphere into two hemispheres that you could then close on top of a bug and catch it. This was, like, my favorite toy, and I would spend loads of time as a kid running around. I used to have a little box, a little jar. Sometimes a jar, sometimes a box. And what I'd do is I'd go into the woods and try and catch caterpillars, because I was really into them. I loved watching them grow. And I remember I once spent, must have been about, I don't know, time is broken when you're a kid, but 10 minutes to an hour just running around my garden chasing after this one blue bottle housefly. And I chased it for ages and ages and ages, and eventually I caught it, and I ran inside, and my dad was talking to his friends, and I showed my dad's friends, and he went, "Aw, poor fly." And I was just struck with guilt. It was like a truck had hit me of guilt. And I went outside and I released the fly. And it was like, I remember half of my brain was saying, I did the right thing. And the other half of my brain was just pissed off that I had to let go of this fly I'd spent so long trying to catch. But I released it. And I hope that fly went on and lived a good life. Or got eaten and fed another animal that had a good life. And that animal may have gotten eaten. Ah, the cycle of carbon. Anyway, I used to go and catch caterpillars using my little, I guess, forceps? Are forceps the right word? They were these little scissors, the sphere scissors, right? I used to go and I used to catch these bugs, because I used to live in the middle of the countryside when I was very, very young, and I used to catch these bugs. And I remember in my primary school, we had a show and tell type thing where we had to bring in something we'd been working on in the week. Most people brought in toys, some people brought in pictures. I brought in a caterpillar I'd caught in the box, and it was like a little see-through jar I'd got and put this caterpillar in. And the teacher was so happy that I'd caught this caterpillar because they were just about to teach us about the life cycle. She asked me, "Hey, Will, is it okay if we can keep the caterpillar in the classroom?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, well, you can keep the caterpillar in the classroom." Yes, I was excited. I just loved the attention. I was like, "Fuck yeah, let's keep this caterpillar in this classroom. I'd love that." So we put it on the windowsill. And every day, we'd come in, and all the kids and me would all run over to this windowsill, and we'd all check on the caterpillar and see how it was doing. And one day I came in, and I was on my own when I came in. I walked in, and I walked over to the jar, and I saw that the caterpillar had gone and been replaced with this felty mess in the corner of the jar. And obviously, we hadn't got to the part of the life cycle where we learned about chrysalises and cocoons. So I saw this, and I started crying a lot, because I thought this thing had just died. I thought it had died and melted. And my teacher explained to me what a cocoon was, and my imagination was captured. My imagination was just gripped. Almost like I'd been gripping the bugs in my forceps. Is forceps the right word? Am I saying something bad? Hold on, let me turn on my computer quickly. I need to Google forcep, because if I've been saying forcep this whole time, forcep, kind of the right word, I guess. Anyway, so my imagination was captured by what I'd been told, that a caterpillar goes in a cocoon, it melts down, And then when it comes out as a butterfly. I was just blown away. I thought they were two different bugs. So learning that they were just the same bug and that they turn into each other like fucking Pokemon was the best thing I could have been told in my little 8-year-old, younger actually, 7, 6-year-old brain. So it became less of a thing of me just walking into class and checking on my caterpillar. And instead, I would wake up every day for school and rush out the door, run to school to check on this cat. I was the first one into school every time just to check on this caterpillar, and every day I'd come in, I'd walk up to the jar and see how it was doing, see how the chrysalis was doing, and the chrysalis didn't change much, but I was still invested in it. It must have been a few weeks later, it felt like an eternity, but a few weeks later I come in, and I guess I'd gotten bored of it at that point, but I wasn't the first one into class this time. I was one of the last ones into class, and all of the other kids had gathered round, and they were all gathered round my jar, and then when I walked in, they were like, Will, come see this. And I walk over, and I'm worried, because I'm thinking, oh no, something's gone wrong. Why are they all gathered? And the teacher says, look, Will, look what's happened. It's what you've been waiting for. And I looked in the jar, and it was a fucking moth. And I was pissed off. I was like, what is this? What has this thing done with my chrysalis? And the teacher was like, no, it's not. That's the caterpillar. And I was like, where's the butterfly? And they're like, it's the moth. The moth is the butterfly. I was like, that's not a butterfly. That is a moth. I'm scared of moths. I hate moths. I like butterflies. Where's my butterfly? And the teacher was like, well, that's just the moth now. That's how it is. And I was pissed. So they were just like, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to let it go? And I was like, nah. So all the kids went out into the playground and let it go. And there was a big thing where they all freed it and it flew away. And I just sat in the classroom and I was pissed off. I was annoyed that my caterpillar did not turn into a butterfly. I was expecting to sit down with everyone and say, look, I've got a butterfly, but instead it was just an ugly grey moth. Yeah, and the moth laid eggs too, if I remember correctly, like as it came out, which doesn't really make sense. I think I might have been imagining some like moth poo as eggs, but I don't know why that. I've still got that memory in my head. The area I grew up though as a kid was rich for moths. Moths? I mean bugs. The area was rich in bugs. I have loads of stories about just bugs and just crap. There were these things called cockchafers. Don't laugh. That's rude. It's their name. But there was this creature called a cockchafer. And there were these bugs. And the best way I can describe them is, have you ever seen a horsefly? Just a big old fat horsefly, right? Mix that with a bumblebee and you've got a cockchafer. Google them if you haven't seen them before. They are ugly as hell. And they are sexually attracted to hair. And when it was cockchafer season, where I was growing up, it used to be just a no-go zone. Don't go outside. However, I didn't know it was cockchafer season. And I was at the airstrip. This was before I'd learned to fly, but I was at the runway. I remember we were having like a barbecue, and I was walking my dog, and I just heard this deep rumbling sound, like it sounded like a hedge trimmer. But the problem is it was like dusk, and like, we were in the middle of nowhere. There was no gardens or anything, so there was no reason to hedge trimmer. And I was sort of running through the grass with my dog. And I hear this buzz. And then my dog comes running back to me, and my dog is just covered in these giant flies. These flies, consider them to be about a little bit bigger than your thumb, right? Well, than my thumb. Maybe like double the size of a thumb, right? And they were huge. And they were just embedded in my dog, just rolling around. And they have these little hooks on their legs for digging into hair. And I've heard about these animals. So I get my dog and we run. I'm like, I do not want to get these. And I was too late because both directions where I could run to were now had this cloud of cockchafers all mating. They come out of the ground for like a day, I think, to mate. And they were all mating. And they were all seeing my hair and my dog's hair. And they were going for us. And I managed to get back to the runway, and I had, my hair was just matted with these flies, and my dog was just covered. And my dog was perfectly happy. He was just having a drink of water and he was just dealing with it. But I was miserable. I was very unhappy. And we were wondering how we were going to get them out of my hair. We were going to have to cut my hair. We were going to have to do anything. And so my dad proposed two options for me. We could either cut all my hair off, which I did not like the sound of. Or we leave them and wait for them to die. Because once they've finished fucking your hair, they die. They like release their sperm and die. That was my two options, chat. So I went with the wait for them to die. And it was not a nice experience. I had to sit there with these creatures just buzzing around in my hair for hours on end before they went. And the thing is, though, looking back on it, I still like those animals. I think they're cool as hell. I might be getting them confused. I believe they are cockchafers, but if I've got a completely wrong bug, please enlighten me in the comments. But yeah, that was my time with cockchafers. I've had loads of other horror stories with bugs. It's almost like these horror stories to do with bugs ingrain themselves into my head so that I can always remember. I don't know, maybe it's like an evolutionary thing. If it's ingrained in my head, I'm more likely to, you know, be wary of this happening again next time. But the next one I have is when we were making paper mache masks, again in primary school, and again where I used to grow up, in the middle of that farming area. There was basically, I went in one day when there were these paper mache masks were drying out, and I walk over into the classroom, and there's a giant spider caught on the paper mache mask, and everyone's too scared to get rid of it. Well, not everyone, but I was one of the people that elected myself to get rid of this spider. So I took it out into the playground and I got myself a little pencil and I pushed it. And the spider bit the pencil. I've never seen a spider use its mandibles, but it did. And it bit the pencil and I couldn't pull it back. So I don't know. That's the most pointless story I've ever told. But there you go. That was the time I almost got my finger bitten off by a spider, I guess. That's far more dramatic. I remember last podcast, the one before, I was saying how I was apologizing a lot for rambling. And everyone in the comments was saying how it was like, don't worry, we want to hear you ramble. So I guess I'm trying to ramble more now. I guess I've set myself up for more of a ramble than before. Anyway, as I grew up, I've still interested in bugs a lot. And I've recently got involved in closed ecosystems during the end of quarantine, I guess. February to now, I've been doing it the most. I was watching YouTube videos of these people who collect, sort of like, they basically just rummage. They collect bits of outdoor material. Detritus, wood, plants, moss, dirt, bit of gravel, and they create these little jars, and then they seal the jar up for months and months, and then they document its process. Now, a lot of these jars fail in the first week, much like a restaurant. They fail in the first week, but some of these jars continue on for months, and you can have this perfectly working ecosystem that has been completely detached from the outside world for years at times. I was reading this one story of a gentleman who'd had his jar for 50 years. It was just moss and like water leaves at this point, but it was still a jar that had its own water cycle. It had its own like ecosystem. It had its own bacteria. It photosynthesized. It was just, it's incredible. And I was, again, my imagination was captured, much like it was when I was a child being taught about cocoons. So I decided I was going to get myself a big old pack of jars and go out and make my own little closed ecosystem. Because why not? You know, I've got nothing else to do. May as well try it out. So the first one I made was a woodland one. Now I have a little foresty area behind my house that I decided to use. So I went out there with my jar and I overturned some logs and I picked up some friends, some woodlice, and put them in the jar. I found a few centipedes and threw them in as well. Centipedes are awesome, by the way. I think I've only as I've grown up, I've started to realize how badass centipedes are, man. They're so fun to watch. I sat and just watched the centipede move for ages because it was so cool. I caught three of them and I put them in the jar. So there's a predator. We have a predator now in the jar, so we needed some prey. I found a spider, but I didn't put it in because I don't think anything that was coming out of the jar was going to be worth it for a spider. So I got some wood lice, which I don't think could serve as prey for centipedes, but hey ho, the centipede's still alive today, so I must have done something right. I put in some wood for the woodlice, some like rotting wood. I put in some leaves, some moss. I put in a little layer of gravel on the bottom as a sediment layer. And then above it, I put the soil, it's got a word, the substrate on top of it. I wet it slightly so that it could begin a water cycle. Put some moss in there, which also had some water. And there we go. And then I sealed the jar and it's sealed today. A lot of the woodlice have died. And I also caught a snail and put it in there, which also died. That's a problem, I believe, because the snail, as it rots, I think it releases ammonia, which could end up killing all the other animals. But hey ho, it was a bit of a mess. the jar looks awful now. It's all rotted and gross. The wood lice that are alive are loving it. And some of the, and the centipedes just living just below the soil substrate. But the wood lice that are alive are loving the rotting wood and they're having a great time. I basically just made a banquet hall for wood lice, essentially. But yeah, that jar, I'm going to tip it away as soon as it's run its course, I think, because it's not very good. But this led on to my second jar, which is absolutely phenomenal. I did everything right. And chat, I'm going to run you through now how I did it so that you can go and do one yourself. So first thing I did was I bought a 5-liter jar off of Amazon. You don't need 5 liters. You can do as small as a Tic Tac container. You can do 2 liters. You can do a 1-liter water bottle. Basically, as long as it's really easy to see into and it's like a nice, like, what's the word? Neutral. So less plastics, I guess, but a nice neutral hard surface. So maybe water bottle's not the best idea, but like a Tic Tac container would work. Glass is the obvious option, you know. Hard plastics are very good. You want to get one like this. Go down to a local freshwater area. It can be anywhere you want, as long as it's fresh water and you know it's got life in it. So, you know, you could do a puddle. That'll be really interesting. But look for lakes and rivers are your best bet. The stiller the water is, the better, I'd say. And what you want to do is you want to go down into the water as close as you can get and as far away from the shore bank as you can go. Get down on your knees and just scoop up sludge. just grab some sludge. You don't have to use your hands, obviously. I did, because I'm a fucking little filthy man. But you can use whatever you want. Just pick up some sludge, pop it in the jar, get a nice ground layer of that sludge going, and then you want to get another container, a cup or something, and just scoop up some of that same river water and pop it in the jar, put the lid on the jar, completely seal it, and there you go. You've made a closed ecosystem. That was what I did for my second one, and it's still alive today, and it is phenomenal to watch. I'll tell you some of the creatures I got in there, because they're amazing. I've spent so many hours watching this jar, I've managed to, like, catalogue almost everything that's living in it. And there's a lot. I'm never drinking river water again. I'm never even, like, opening my mouth while swimming anymore, after seeing how much crap there is just swimming about in the water constantly. So I started off with a lot of these larvae that were bouncing around and were swimming about. And I immediately worried about this because larvae usually don't hatch into waterborne creatures. They would normally hatch into mosquitoes and gnats, which is what they did do. But unfortunately, I've sealed this jar properly with, like, sealant, so I couldn't get them out. So those died, unfortunately. I think it was about 3 or 4 that made it out of the larval stage that ended up dying in the jar. But they ended up feeding the other creatures. There was about 4 water snails, one of which, Big Bertha, I've named her, is a huge snail, and I mean huge, and she walks along the edge of the glass eating the algae. So she's pretty much my only way I get of seeing into my jar now is with Big Bertha eating the algae on the glass, which is phenomenal, I think. I think it's great. There's a couple of smaller snails that are sort of vibing around. They tend to stick to the bottom. They tend to hang on to the twigs, because I put a few assorted twigs in there just because it looked nice. The next is these little water beetles. Now, these guys are quick. Whenever I shine a light in the jar, I think they are afraid of the light. They swim away super quickly. But when you see them, they're incredible to watch. They're these little shiny black beetles, and they dig around in the mud and the muck at the bottom. And they bury themselves away from the light. They're super interesting. The next one I found is these little earwig-type creatures. They're not earwigs, but they're waterborne. So I'm not entirely sure what they are, but they're awesome. They kind of just hang around on the twigs, much like the snails. They're a bit more proactive than snails, though. They tend to swim away if the water gets jostled at all. And finally, the most prolific members of my jar are water boatmen. I think they're called back paddlers in America. I was talking about this with Phil's wife, Kristen. I think they're called back paddlers or something. And they're brilliant. They are absolutely amazing. I love them. And when I say they're the most prolific creature in my jar, I mean it, like, a lot. I'm sorry, I'm not putting my words together well today. There are a fuck ton of them. That mainly in the larval stage, they just swim about, they float about, and they're very, very sensitive to the light. Whenever I shine my light on them, they all flock to the edge of the jar that the light is being shone in on. And they love it, and I love them. They're really fun to watch. They float about and they really fill out the jar a lot. It's really interesting to watch them. And if you're going to go down to the water and do this yourself, try to go down around this time of year when you're going to get a lot of these guys, because they really do make the entire thing look incredibly interesting. Some honourable mentions for creatures living in my freshwater jar. There's these little white worm things. They look like little flecks of fur. I identified them a while ago. I think they're called detritus worms. I identified them on a fish keeper's forum, you know, like a forum for people that keep freshwater fish. And everything on it was like, you need to get rid of these. They're really dangerous. They can carry bacteria. They're really bad for the pH level of the water. And at first, because I wasn't very knowledgeable on closed ecosystems, I was worried. I was thinking, oh God, are these things going to kill all of my ecosystem? But it turns out the water I was having is so full of algae and so murky that they're actually a really important part of the ecosystem. The algae in the water filters out the ammonia and turns it into nitrate, I believe. So some biologist is going to correct me. I failed biology A level. But yeah, they filter out the ammonia into nitrate. And then these detritus worms are actually part of the creatures that ingest the nitrate. And it's harmful to them. They die from this nitrate ingestion. But at the same time, they come away from it having taken it out of the system and turning it back into carbon, which then turns back into ammonia, which then the algae eats again. How cool is that? They're a huge part of the ecosystem in my little jar, but they're actually a pest in freshwater fish jars. Some tips I have to you if you're planning on making a freshwater jar, which I heartily, heartily encourage you to do, make a freshwater jar. Some tips I have. Number one, place it in a sunny area that doesn't get too much heat. So you want the sun to be able to hit it so that the algae can photosynthesize, but you don't want to have it so it's too hot, because otherwise the heat, it can raise the temperature in the water and kill off some of the animals inside. So make sure when you place it, you're placing it on like a nice dim windowsill where it's going to get a little bit of sun, just enough to photosynthesize, but not enough that you're actually going to damage the ecosystem that's inside your jar. Some other tips I'd have for you, make sure you keep it small. I have a few snails in mine, but I wouldn't encourage it. Snails carry a lot of ammonia when they die, and you can really upset the balance of chemicals in the water if something big like that dies. Same goes for frogs, fish. Leave them out in the wild. They don't need to be put in a jar. Those kind of animals, especially the fish and frogs, you know. Another tip, try and get as little pollution as you can. This is why I recommended you go as far away from the shore bank as possible. The bank of rivers and lakes tend to have a lot of pollution build up due to the amount of grass and twigs that are laying in the water. So if you go deeper into the body of water, you can make sure you stay away from pollution. You get more clean. Also, people are less likely to launch their scraps into the middle of a river. They're more likely to just let it drop onto the bank. So yeah, you're just less likely to get pollution. For instance, I've got a peanut shell in my first freshwater jar, which is a bit of a mistake. And my next tip for you is, if you have enough money to buy multiple jars, make sure you get multiple of the same type of ecosystem. You'll be surprised how different each ecosystem is, how much differs between ecosystem 1, ecosystem 2, ecosystem 3. It's phenomenal. It's monumental how much changes. And I heartily recommend you give multiple ones a go so you can see, you know. For instance, I made another ecosystem where I learned more about how to maintain these, so I had a substrate layer and stuff. And one of the things I noticed was that in my second one, it's a lot clearer looking. The algae tends to settle on the rocks I placed on the bottom, leaving the water itself very clear, much clearer than my first one, which was literally I just scooped some water out. Very interesting stuff, very interesting. The next one I tried after my freshwater one was a saltwater one. This took two attempts because I'm a fool. I went down to Brighton Beach on the first one with my jar, and it was a very clear day. I went down at low tide and it was a super still, super clear day. So I walked down to the beach and there was nothing. The shore was just covered in just sand and some maybe a couple dead bits of seaweed, a couple of bits of pollution. There's some bit of broken glass, you know, couple syringes. You know how it is on the beach. But just a bunch of just stuff, just junk, right? But nothing natural had washed up ashore. So I was a little bit worried because I was thinking, right, well, maybe England isn't the best place to get this closed ecosystem materials from. So I left it alone. I walked home a bit dejected until I found someone who lives in the same city as me in Brighton who had made a saltwater ecosystem. And I emailed him and I asked him for some advice, and his advice was to wait for a really, really stormy day. So I did. I waited for a very, very stormy day, and it came sometime in February, March. And I went down to the beach in the middle of the pouring rain. It was super windy. It was like gale winds. It was really rainy. And I went down at low tide, which was about 11 p.m. that day. Got down to the beach and it was just covered in seaweed. And each bit of seaweed had these little tiny crabs in them. It's amazing. It's absolutely phenomenal. I basically was just like a kid at a candy store. I was walking around on the beach. There was no one else there. Middle of the night, windy, rainy. I had my coat on. I had my jar. I walked around and just picked up just so much seaweed and so much of this like stuff that had washed up ashore that was going to die. And essentially, I it was a really nice feeling that I'd rescued it, because when you take stuff out of a river, you're not harming the creatures that you're putting into your jar, but you're definitely not saving them. With these creatures that were washing up on the beach, it really felt like I was doing a service. Because I know that these creatures would end up eating by seagulls the next morning and be rolled around in by dogs. You know, my dog used to do it all the time. So next thing I needed was water. Once I had these little crabs and stuff, and I scooped up some sand, but then I needed to get water. Now, the issue was I didn't want to catch water that was from the shore. I didn't bring any Wellington boots. So I rolled up my jeans, I took off my socks and shoes, and I waded in the middle of a storm into the sea and just scooped up just a ton of water and just popped it in the jar. I brought it home, waited for all of the sand and stuff to settle, and I just had such an assortment of really interesting creatures, some crustaceans, a lot of crustaceans actually, mainly crustaceans, but we had a couple of little floating like larvae, a couple of little see-through sort of translucent looking bugs were swimming around, this really beautiful iridescent bug. I haven't identified it yet, but it was this iridescent rainbow colored bug. It's like swimming around on the bottom, it's got a little fan tail, it's amazing. If you live near the sea, salt water is harder to maintain. My first system from salt water actually died. But if you can, and you know how to do it, and you can get your hands on salt water ecosystems, definitely give it a go. It's so recommended. I absolutely love it. If you may let me round off back to where we started. Wood lice. I had a bit of an issue with my initial stock of wood lice when I moved into my new house. When I moved into my house that I'm living in now, there was a ton of wood lice just living everywhere. The house had been left completely, basically left uninhabited for so long, and it had gained such a damp that wood lice had started to make their way into the basement rooms. This is the same house where, if you've seen Phil's stream where I talk about it, it's the house that's got haunted paintings in it and a really weird layout. It's got three front doors. But the house itself, the basement was just covered in wood lice and flies, and just it was just awful. So I went online and I was like, how to get rid of flies? Now that one's interesting, because flies are actually bad for your health as humans. They're really, really detrimental to your health if you live with them. So we need to get them out ASAP. And I would love to have just left the windows open and let them go, but they wouldn't leave. So I needed to kill them. So we ordered this Raid spray. I don't know if you've ever used Raid, but my God, it works. Like this pesticide. Holy crap, I googled it and it's a neurotoxin. So what it essentially does is it attacks the brain of these flies. But I would spray it in this room, spray a ton of it with like a rag over my face, spray it in the room, walk out, shut the door, you come back in and it's just empty. It's just clean, there's just dead flies everywhere. A bit morbid, I'm sorry if you like flies, but it was a really interesting thing. I'd never tried it before, and there we go, that's how I got rid of my flies. The wood lice, though, were a different story. Wood lice are my friends. I really, really like wood lice. And like I told you at the beginning of this podcast, I would never hurt a wood louse. I'd feel awful. Like, it's just a principle of mine that I wouldn't hurt wood lice, even if they are living in the house. And loads of people were telling me how they're really bad for you. You need to get them out because it's bad for your health and things. Because I slept a few nights with the house polluted with wood lice because I just didn't mind. I mean, they weren't going to get up to my bed. They were mostly hanging out in the corners of the rooms. So I sort of figured, until I know how to get rid of them, I'm going to live with them for a bit. And all my friends were like, no, you can't do that. You gotta like spray them. You gotta throw them out. You gotta crunch them. And I was like, no, I don't want to. I just didn't want to. So I spoke with one of my friends who's actually really invested in insects. I don't remember what degree he has, but it is in a type of biology. I don't think it's microbiology. It's something. It's a study of bugs and insectology, I'm sure, something like that. And I spoke to him about wood lice, and his answer was brilliant because it was exactly what I wanted to hear. Which is, if you have wood lice in your house, chances are you've got yourself some rot going on, which is a bad, bad sign. However, because I just moved in and I checked the house and there was no rot, it was completely fine, he said most likely the wood lice just came in because it was a bit damp and cold. And he said that luckily for you, wood lice like the opposite things that humans like. So your wood lice will love damp and cold, and they will be attracted to things that are rotting. Humans, however, like the warm and dry, and they tend to get rid of things that are rotting, he said. So, Will, he said, what you decided to do of just leaving them in the room is probably the best bet. If you just live in your room for a bit, they will leave because they'll know it's just not a place with rot. So I said, okay. So I basically went around and I cleared out some rot. Basically, the basement that I live in has a little pocket area, like a little window looking out to the outside, and has a little pocket area. And in that pocket area, a bunch of leaves had built up. And I figured that was where the woodlice were. So I scooped up the leaves nice and gently, and I put them in the garden to go and rot in a nice pile. I kept them away from sight of birds. And I put the leaves there. And it was like a fucking exodus. There was a period of time for like a few hours where if you sat down and looked out the window, it was like just thousands of woodlice just climbing up the walls. They were just leaving. They were just done. He was right. Woodlice just left. And from that day, dear chap, and I mean this, listeners, woodlice are bros. They're just bros. I spoke to him. They're not bad for your health. They are, this post brought to you by woodlice. They're not bad for your health. They don't get in the way because they tend to only look for damp and cold places. So if you like the warm and dry, which most, if you're a human listening to this, you probably do, they will leave you alone. They're bros. Next time you're walking around and you see a woodlouse, don't think that's a woodlouse, that's a pest, that's an insect. Think that's a friend, chat. Think it's a friend. Because they are friends. They're just here to look after you. They're not going to look after you, but they want to keep out of your way. They don't want to get in your way. They don't want to upset you. This podcast has been a bit of a mess. 31 minutes and I'm done. I'm not going to rattle on because there's nothing else I can say. I've told you everything I want to say about woodlice and bugs. I hope you've enjoyed it. Yeah. I'm probably going to do these... let's have a look quickly. I'm going to do these every Saturday. And then you'll get a little one like this every now and then in between if I just have something I want to talk about. And I really want to talk about bugs. So here you go. Next one on Saturday. Bye-bye.